On a quiet October morning in 1978, Gary Deal's family arrived at his home to find out what was going on. No one had heard from him or his wife Joan since the previous Thursday, and they had grown concerned. After receiving no answer at the door, a family friend snuck into the home where she made a grisly discovery. Gary, his wife, and their three-year-old son were all dead, the victims of a horrifying murder. It appeared clear to investigators that this was no random crime, and instead, the Deal family had been targeted for execution in a brutal fashion. Despite the development of multiple persons of interest, police could never find the evidence they needed for an arrest. Now, more than 40 years later, investigators are going back into the case, hoping that advancements in DNA analysis might finally unravel the mystery of who butchered an entire family and why. This is Trace Evidence, Episode 123, The Deal Family Murders. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today we examine a truly horrifying triple homicide in the case of the Deal family murders. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and disappearances. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence. The show is also available on MeWe and Minds. If you're interested in supporting the show and getting some Trace Evidence merch, there's a Patreon available at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information. You can submit case suggestions directly through the website or email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Just days before Halloween in 1978, an unknown assailant entered the Deal family home and murdered the entire family. This is episode 123, The Deal Family Murders. Folsom, New Jersey is a quiet little borough located in the southeast of the state. Voted one of New Jersey's best places to live, family homes are dotted along the quiet streets, home to a population of less than 2,000 residents. Folsom sits just 30 miles east of Philadelphia, across the Delaware River, marking it as the halfway point to Atlantic City, another 30 miles east. New York City is more than 100 miles to the north, placing the borough in the more rural southern half of the state. Folsom is still highly ranked today, with the proximity of beaches and the favorable climate being noted, as well as a cost of living vastly different from what you'd find in the northern half of the state. Even today, Folsom boasts an A-plus rating in their crime statistics, showing the borough as having 71% less crime than the national average. In 1978, those numbers were even lower as new residents poured into the area, causing a 266% explosion in population over the course of the decade. Folsom was thought of as a nice, out-of-the-way place to live, a good place to escape the busyness of the city, and it was especially appealing to new families looking for a safe, quiet place to raise their children. However, in the late fall of the year, a horrifying and grisly triple homicide would shock the sleepy community. Residents locked their doors and feared the return of a killer who eradicated a family in brutal fashion and then seemingly disappeared into the very emptiness from which he had emerged. More than 40 years later, the police and family remain mystified and haunted by an endless string of questions, though perhaps the two most pertinent are, who could have committed such an atrocious crime? And why did he choose the young Deal family as his targets? 26-year-old Gary Deal was a blue-collar worker, picking up jobs at garages and working various types of construction and manual labor to support his growing family. Gary was married to Joan, also 26, who was a stay-at-home mom taking care of their three-year-old son, Jason. According to reports of the time, the Deals were known as extremely polite and friendly, if not very quiet. Living in such a small community in a time where neighbors still socialized and spent time together, Gary and Joan had developed a reputation for being a very nice couple who adored their son and were looking to better their place in the world, to provide him with the options they hadn't had growing up. But they weren't exactly looking to spend a lot of time out. Having a child that young is busy work. Most of their neighbors later told reporters that while they knew of the deals, they hadn't spent a lot of time getting to know them as people. Dorothy Spangler, a Folsom borough clerk, told the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, "I knew Gary, but I didn't know him real well. I had met him two or three times. He was an okay kid. He seemed like an all right guy to me," end quote. Gary and Joan moved into the area 3 years prior in 1975, following the birth of their son, moving into a brown split-level home located along Highway 73, Mays Landing Road. A year prior, Gary had severely injured his leg in a motorcycle accident and had been unemployed for the duration. He'd previously done work as a mechanic and, up until the time of his accident, specialized in painting and bodywork. It had been a difficult time, but as his leg healed, things were beginning to look better, and in September, Gary picked up a job as an installer at RAC Fencing in Cardiff, a 20-minute drive to the southeast. On the morning of Thursday, October 26th, Gary was reported to have been in very high spirits. Co-workers at RAC told the morning news that he had mentioned he was looking forward to that evening as he and Joan would be celebrating their fifth wedding anniversary. Vince Gazzara, a supervisor at RAC, told The Record, quote, "Gary was a very happy-go-lucky individual. He was the type of guy everyone liked," end quote. Gazzara had made plans with Gary to go hunting that weekend, but tragedy would strike. Thursday, the 26th, would be the last time anyone saw the Deal family alive. Sometime between 6 and 7 p.m. on the 26th, Joan's parents telephoned the couple to wish them a happy anniversary. While full details have never been released, it has been confirmed that the call was answered and that there didn't appear to be anything wrong. Nothing to indicate any problems, threats, or concerns. The first indication that anything was wrong came on the morning of Friday the 27th. A friend and co-worker of Gary's arrived at his home that morning to give him a ride to work, as he frequently did. But upon arriving, Gary wasn't outside waiting, nor did he come out after several minutes. Gary's friend approached the home and knocked on the door, but received no answer. No one thought much of it at the time, as co-workers later joked that they assumed Gary's anniversary celebration had gone longer than he'd planned, and he had probably just overslept. Over the weekend, though, Gary's family began growing concerned. Calls to the home went unanswered, and it was highly unusual for no one in the family to hear from Gary or Joan. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, a neighbor located approximately 700 yards from the Deal home received a call from Gary's mother, Diane, sometime that weekend. Reportedly, Gary's mother was concerned about having not heard from her son. Much like the case of Gary's friend, this neighbor received no answer at the door, nor did they receive an answer to repeated phone calls. While the family tried not to worry, thinking maybe they were extending their anniversary celebration into the weekend, the more time passed, the more concerned they became, and everything came to a head on the morning of Monday, October 30th. Concerned about his brother and having received multiple calls from his mother, Gary's older brother Alan and a family friend, Michelle DeLuca, decided to bring Diane to the split-level home on Mays Landing Road, arriving just before 9 a.m. The house was quiet, and after repeated knocks and shouting from the outside, there was no movement or answers. Frustrated, Diane asked Alan if he could try to break down the front door. After a fruitless attempt, the trio began going around the home looking for a possible way in. Each noted that, as they passed by windows, they saw no movement and heard no sounds. Upon reaching the back of the house, they once again tried that door, finding it locked with no ability to gain entry. Looking around at the back of the home, they spotted an accessible window which led into the family's rec room. Alan broke out the window, clearing the frame of sharp glass before helping Michelle, the smallest of the three, wiggle her way into the house. Once Michelle had gained entry, Alan and Diane went to the front door and Michelle made her way towards it to let them in. Walking up the stairs and entering the front hall, Michelle made a grisly discovery. Michelle later described the scene to the Philadelphia Daily News, saying, quote, "That's where Gary was. He was lying on the floor in just his jeans, right inside the front door on the landing above the steps," end quote. The gold carpet in the entryway was stained to a deep red, soaked in a partially dry pool of blood emerging from beneath Gary's body. In a panic, Michelle opened the door and Alan came inside. Diane waited outside. It was clear from looking at Gary that he was deceased, and so Alan and Michelle made their way further into the house, hoping to find Joan and Jason alive, but they would only find more horror and blood. Making their way upstairs, the two found Joan's nude body lying on the floor of the master bedroom. There was an excessive amount of blood, and as had been the case with Gary, it was clear that Joan had expired. Finally, making their way down the hall into the bedroom of 3-year-old Jason, they found the toddler lying in his crib in his pajamas. Everything was soaked in blood, as had been the case with his parents. Young Jason was also noted as being dead. The toddler was still clutching his Curious George stuffed animal. Horrified and frightened, Alan and Michelle dialed 911 and exited the home at approximately 9:30 a.m. Diane was held back from entry, not wanting her to see the grisly scene inside. The Hamilton police responded, but upon viewing the scene, quickly called in additional agencies, being joined by investigators from the New Jersey State Police, as well as the Atlantic County Prosecutor's Office. Any initial theories about the possibility of a robbery gone wrong were quickly dismissed when investigators examined the bodies. It was determined at the scene that Gary had been shot in the head multiple times and then had his throat slit with a knife. Much like her husband, Joan had also been shot multiple times in the head and had her throat slit. 3-year-old Jason had his throat slit. Investigators were unsure if he hadn't been shot because the killer had run out of bullets or if he simply didn't think it was necessary. Shell casings from a .25 caliber handgun were found near the bodies of Gary and Joan. Police later confirmed the murder weapon as a 9-shot handgun, and a total of 9 bullets were recovered from Gary and Joan, implying strongly that Jason's throat had been slashed due to the killer running out of bullets. Either way, the family had been brutally murdered, and if one thing was clear to investigators at the time, it was that this appeared to be a planned, personal, and targeted attack. They didn't believe it was a random crime. Interestingly, Borough Fire Commissioner Joseph Spanger told the Courier-Post that the murders had occurred across the street from Police Chief Edward Ebby, which led some to speculate at the time that it could have been a case of mistaken identity, with the killer planning to target the chief's home and instead arriving at the Deal home. This was entertained for a period of time in the media, but there was no follow-up and investigators never commented on that possibility. While the entire crime was horrifying, police were very focused on Jason's murder. At the time, it was felt that whoever had committed the murders may have had an issue with either Gary, Joan, or both, but no one could determine why Jason was killed as well. Being 3 years old, it was unlikely he would have been able to identify the suspect, though it was possible the suspect could have been someone he knew well enough to give a name or description of. At a minimum, he likely could have selected a suspect out of a photo lineup. Based on initial analysis of the scene, police theorized that Gary and Joan had likely been in bed or preparing for bed at the time of the murders. It was thought that Jason had been put to bed for the night, at which time someone may have knocked on the front door, prompting Gary to get out of bed and go check. Friends and family reportedly told police that Gary was highly unlikely to open his door in the middle of the night to someone he didn't know. They also emphasized that Gary was educated in karate and knew how to fight. The absence of a struggle or signs of forced entry combined with this information led investigators to put forth the possibility that Gary had known his killer and had likely let him in. There were also no signs of robbery. Police believe that within seconds of opening the door, the assailant had opened fire, killing Gary almost immediately. The killer then proceeded through the house, likely killing Joan second and then finally Jason. Much of the detail surrounding the methods of death and the timeline wouldn't be filled in until autopsies could be conducted. When asked about the investigation, County Chief of Detectives Bernard McBride told the Daily Journal, quote, "Right now, we have nothing. The autopsy will give us a better idea of when this happened. We've also got to check into this guy a little more. This is a brutal type of murder that just doesn't make sense at this point," end quote. When asked about possibilities, authorities told reporters that the only thing they knew for sure is that it was not a murder-suicide and they were actively looking for a person of interest. Investigators canvassed the neighborhood in hopes of finding anyone who might have seen a person or vehicle in the area that stood out to them, though ultimately they weren't able to find anyone who had seen or heard anything, not even the gunshots. In addition to investigators working inside the home, additional police taped off the half-acre property while 20 investigators entered the wooded area behind the home. The group of investigators formed a grid search looking for any signs of the suspect or perhaps either of the murder weapons, which were not recovered at the scene. They were seeking a handgun and a knife, which the killer appeared to have brought with him, as there were no knives that appeared to be missing from the Deal home. A second search was conducted the following day, on Halloween, and spanned out further, combing over 2 miles of woods and fields near the home. After a 4-hour search, police returned empty-handed, noting to the Philadelphia Daily News that they had found nothing related to the investigation. The crime drew a lot of attention, both on local and national levels. Police were extremely cautious about what they would say to reporters in the hours and days after the initial discovery of the murder scene. One area in which they did speculate had to do with the time at which the murders were committed. Investigators stated that they couldn't pinpoint an exact day and time, though they suspected it had happened sometime between 7 p.m. on the 26th and 9 a.m. on the 30th. However, they also commented that it appeared the victims had been deceased for more than a day, and they were awaiting autopsy results to try and lock in a more specific timeline. Autopsies were conducted that same Halloween in hopes of finding some answers. Several bullets were removed from both Gary and Joan during their autopsies, totaling 9. Ultimately, it was ruled that the two had died as a result of gunshots, while Jason died due to an extensive loss of blood following having had his throat cut. The timeline was more difficult to determine, with police telling reporters that they believed the Deal family had likely been killed late Thursday night, the last time anyone had seen them, or possibly early in the morning on Friday. The autopsy also determined that all three had likely been dead for approximately 36 to 48 hours by the time they were discovered Monday morning. Chief McBride addressed some speculation at the time that the murders might have been related to the mafia, telling the Courier-Post, quote, "Anything like this that happens in Atlantic County is automatically tied to organized crime. It's just not that way," end quote. The fact was, they didn't have anyone in mind at the time. They hadn't gotten very far into their investigation of Gary and Joan's background yet, and they believed they would find something there which would give them an indication, be it someone they had issues with, a possible affair, or anything else. One interesting angle discovered by investigators in the days after the murders was related to Gary. He had been a motorcycle enthusiast, and through their investigation they had found links between him and a notoriously violent motorcycle gang in the area, the Pagans. The Pagans are defined as an outlaw motorcycle gang by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and are active in many states along the East Coast, including New Jersey. Their criminal activities have been linked to include murder, kidnapping, and drug dealing, among others. While at the time they could not confirm whether Gary belonged to the gang or merely associated with some of its members, they did tell the Courier-Post that they were 99% sure he was connected to them in some way. Police began tackling the possibility that Gary could have had a falling out with members of the gang, which could have resulted in a hit being put out on him, with his family likely having been collateral damage or due to a drugged-up and overzealous gang member. Despite this belief, authorities have never been able to gather enough evidence to make a solid link between the murders and any bike gang, nor has the nature of Gary's possible association been discussed. Later, Sergeant Charles Damon of the State Police told the Morning News, quote, Of course, we're checking all the leads, but as yet, we have no information that Deal was connected with any motorcycle group. End quote. However, during a 2019 interview with the podcast The Tape Room, New Jersey State Police Detective Mario Nocito did state that it was believed Gary had ties to some on-the-side businesses, possibly linked to criminal activities. Police set up a roadblock near the Deal family home a week after the murders, stopping all cars coming through the area looking for any information about what may have transpired the night the murders were committed. They hoped that someone driving by that Thursday night might also have been driving by the previous Thursday when they believed the murders took place. According to authorities, they received several tips during the six-hour roadblock, which they began following up on. But as time passed, the case began growing cold, and investigators had very little to work with. In hopes of developing more leads, police appealed to the public. On November 1st, 2 days after discovering the murders, State Police Chief Charles Fuker told reporters, quote, "We're asking for the people's help before all the leads get cold," end quote. A $1,000 reward was later offered for information leading to an arrest, and while investigators reported they had received several tips, those tips had not panned out. By November 4th, police set up a hotline specifically for tips related to the Deal family murders. Multiple tips came in during the first week of the hotline, and while they were all followed up on, none led investigators any closer to determining who may have been responsible. Sadly, the investigation into the Deal family's murder began growing cold rapidly, and by the end of the year, police had to admit in frustration that they had very little to work with all their leads failing to develop. 4 months after the murders, police considered the possibility of a link between the murder of the Deal family and the disappearance of two individuals who were unconnected to them. 32-year-old David Emmerich, a convicted cocaine dealer, and his then-girlfriend, 24-year-old Bonnie Pelliser, disappeared from a home in South Camden, some 30 miles to the northeast of Folsom, right near the Pennsylvania border. Upon entering the home, police discovered pools of blood, pieces of flesh, and a blood-stained meat cleaver. At the time, Dennis Wickstead, assistant Camden County prosecutor, told the Philadelphia Daily News that the cases may have been linked to drug activity involving a motorcycle gang. There does not appear to be any follow-up on this theory, and all articles related to Emmerich and Pelliser end in 1988. The missing couple were apparently never found, and any link between their disappearance and the murder of the Deal family has never been established. However, murders connected to the Pagans once again came into the Deal family investigation in the fall of 1983. Louis Giambi, 47 at the time, was arrested and charged with the murder of the Stewart family. According to the investigation, Giambi had been hired by James Cloran Jr., an associate of the Pagans, to kill a man who was set to testify against him in court on an assault charge. Somehow, Giambi went to the wrong house, and on the evening of April 12, 1982, Giambi broke in through the back door and held William and Catherine Stewart at gunpoint. He ushered them into an upstairs bathroom and opened fire, killing both. Giambi also shot and killed the Stewart's 3-year-old daughter, according to the Courier-Post. Giambi was convicted of the Stewart murders in June of 1984, and at the time, authorities noted that he was suspected in 5 other murders, including Gary, Joan, and Jason Deal. According to an article in the Philadelphia Daily News, at least one informant working undercover for police pointed to Giambi as the killer of the Deal family. At the time, police speculated that Gary may have been involved in the drug trade in some way connected to the Pagans or another motorcycle gang, and that this led to their murders. Considering his willingness to kill not only the Stewarts but their 3-year-old daughter in such a cold-blooded fashion, it wasn't difficult to understand why authorities considered Giambi as a potential suspect. However, police never managed to obtain a confession, nor could they gather enough evidence to confirm Giambi had been the killer. Unfortunately, by this time, 7 years had passed, And investigators still didn't have what they needed to make an arrest or even name someone as an official suspect. Gary Deal was laid to rest in Oak Grove Cemetery near his parents' town of Hamilton. Joan and Jason were buried in Harnebo Cemetery in Philadelphia, close to her parents. Despite their sincerest hopes, it appeared that whoever had murdered their children, neither Gary nor Joan's parents would live to see justice done. In fact, over the course of the next 30 years, there would be little, if any, mention of the case. Eventually, the files were moved to the Cold Case Division, where they would sit until 2018. At the time of the crime, DNA was still 8 years away from being far enough along to be used as evidence in a criminal investigation and prosecution. All investigators could do back then was try to type the blood and determine if there was any present which belonged to someone other than the Deal family members. However, during the investigation, police did accumulate DNA evidence in addition to ballistics and fibers. With technology advancing, and in the light of familial DNA investigations resulting in the identification of several does, in addition to the famous arrests like that of the Golden State Killer, New Jersey police decided it was time to take another look at the evidence recovered from the Deal family home. In November of 2018, that evidence was sent out to a lab to be examined with new scientific methods to hopefully gather evidence which might help link a suspect to the murders. According to investigators, upon looking into the cold case files, they determined that there might be enough evidence available to test under these new methods. While state police explained they were re-examining the evidence, they also turned to the public once more for assistance. The New Jersey State Police issued a public statement, reading in part, quote, "The brutal murder of the Deal family sent shockwaves throughout New Jersey and across the country, with numerous local and federal law enforcement agencies assisting with the case. The original detectives conducted an extremely thorough and relentless investigation, compiling volumes of information before exhausting all leads. Although numerous suspects were developed, no one was ever charged. The cases remained under investigation by detectives from the State Police Major Crime Homicide South Unit throughout the past 40 years. Updated investigative leads are still being sought today." End quote. Nearly 2 years later, and there have been no further developments or statements from the New Jersey State Police. Whether or not testing resulted in the discovery of new evidence or DNA remains unknown, though the case remains open. It has been 42 years since a vicious and violent killer walked into the Deal family home and executed Gary, Joan, and 3-year-old Jason. For all of these years, police have developed persons of interest, though they've never managed to find enough evidence to charge anyone. Both families have continued to hope that someday they would find the answers to their questions and see justice served for their loved ones, but to date, this has failed to happen. Somehow, someone managed to get away with this horrible crime, eradicating a family and splintering two others. Police believe that the killer is known, that there are people who hold the key to charging him if only they would come forward. 42 years is a long time to wait for justice when all it would take is a single phone call to assuage the grief and pain which has haunted two families for more than 4 decades. Perhaps someone out there does know the truth, and maybe that person is listening right now. Nowadays, there's a lot of different entertainment options available, but you could be missing out on some of the most compelling international shows out there. With Acorn TV, you can break out of the domestic bubble and experience some of the amazing shows the world has to offer. Acorn TV is a commercial-free streaming service that's rooted in British television. It's home to sophisticated and artful storytelling with top-rated mysteries, addicting dramas, heartfelt comedies, and so much more. I love how I can just install it on my streaming device and watch from the comfort of my own home, or take it with me on my phone or laptop. Lately, I've been getting really into My Life is Murder, an Australian detective drama starring Lucy Lawless as former detective Alexa Crowe. I'm also super documentary obsessed and recently found myself fascinated by The Detectives, a series following special units of the Manchester Police. Clearly, I can't get enough true crime. I always find something new to watch on Acorn TV because it's loaded with thousands of hours of binge-worthy content. You can stream on all your favorite devices for just $5.99 a month. Escape to Britain and beyond without leaving your seat. Try Acorn TV free for 30 days by going to acorn.tv and use my promo code TRACE. That's ACORN.TV, code TRACE to get your first 30 days for free. The Deal family murder was a horrible, terrifying, and gruesome triple homicide that's really difficult to research. Aside from the grisly nature of the murders, the information trail dries up after the mid-1980s until the new announcements of a renewed investigation in 2018, from which it seems little has developed or advanced, at least as of this recording. It's difficult to imagine the kind of suspect you're looking for when you get into the details of the murder. Gary and Joan both shot in the head multiple times, having their throats slit in the aftermath. And of course, the unspeakable murder of 3-year-old Jason, having his throat cut while lying in his crib. It's almost too terrible to fathom. Perhaps what makes it all the more disturbing is knowing that the killer got away with it. He approached the home one quiet fall night, knocked on the door, and apparently opened fire as soon as he gained entry. Making his way deeper into the home, he then executed Joan, who fell dead on the bedroom floor, before walking into Jason's room and killing him, leaving behind almost nothing as a clue to his identity or motive. Motive is truly a key piece of this case, a piece which has been missing since day one. There have been different theories suggested, but the fact of the matter is, no one knows for sure why exactly the Deal family was targeted. Throughout my research, I came across multiple headlines which addressed the fact that police were exceedingly frustrated with their inability to determine motive because, at the end of the day, that motive is going to at least point you in the direction you need to be looking. Could it have been a jealous lover, former or current? Could it have been related to Gary's alleged connections to a biker gang and their illegal activities? Could it have been like the case of the Stewart family, a case of mistaken identity? Or is it possible that this crime was ultimately committed by someone the Deal family knew and trusted? These are all important questions, and as of today, there are no solid answers. When it comes down to this case, there are essentially two branches each theory could go down. Either this was a random crime, perhaps with no direct connection to the Deals at all, or the Deal family were specifically targeted by someone or a group for a reason which is yet to be determined. Now, most investigators don't believe there's a possibility that the crime could have been random, but that all depends on context. When you look at the Stewart family murders, they essentially were random. The hired hitman, Louis Giambi, went to the wrong house. Isn't that incredibly disturbing? The idea that an entire family can be murdered because a psychotic killer knocked on the wrong door? Well, there are those who believe that could have been the case with Gary, Joan, and Jason. Someone knocks on your door late at night. As soon as Gary opened the door, shots were fired and he's down, dying within moments. Before Joan can even get dressed, the killer erupts into her bedroom and opens fire. Moments later, he enters Jason's bedroom and kills the 3-year-old with a knife. At some point, both Joan and Gary had their throats slit, but given that their deaths were attributed to the gunshots, you have to wonder, did the killer cut their throats after shooting them, or after he'd already gone through the whole house? There's no sign of a struggle, no indication of forced entry, nothing to suggest robbery had been the motive. Hell, the killer didn't even throw some things around to at least give off the sense that this could have been a robbery gone wrong. He wanted you to know what it was. It feels planned. It feels like something which had been in the works, and it feels like murder was the prime reason the killer went to the Deal's home that night. For more than 40 years, police have believed the family had to have been targeted, but no one can completely rule out the possibility that it was like the Stewarts, targeted but mistaken. I thought it was fascinating that the local fire chief pointed out how the Deals lived across the street from a police chief. Now, there's never been anything to suggest that he or his family had been the targets, but given what we know about Louis Giambi, who was and may still be considered a person of interest, It wouldn't be completely out of the question that the killer could have knocked on the wrong door that night, and three innocent people were killed as a result of that mistake. There are some who argue that it didn't even have to be that complicated. Maybe this was the result of someone looking to do something horrible, a psychopath on the rampage who just happened to pass by their home or knew it to be there. Maybe someone high out of his mind heads out and finds himself outside their home. There's a possibility of randomness, but there appears to be too many questions for that to make sense. If it's random, why kill the child? If the family didn't know their assailant, then there's no need to worry about the child IDing you. Of course, it's a sad fact that there are some people out there for whom life carries no value, and murdering a child would cause them no more pause than murdering anyone else. Just look at Giambi. If it was random, that could go lengths to explaining the absence of evidence to link a suspect. There would be no motive, no connection between the killer and the family, nothing to track and no links to explore. Random crimes are incredibly difficult to investigate, especially with a lack of evidence. Police know the caliber and type of the gun. They likely have an idea on the size and shape of the knife, but beyond that, they're pretty much in the dark. We know there's DNA-related evidence. We know fibers were recovered, but there's never been any mention of fingerprints or anything else which could have helped identify a suspect back in 1978. Now, 42 years later, we wait to see if science can provide any assistance. However, there are many reasons to think that this crime was anything but random. The nature of the murders feels personal. When Giambi murdered the Stewarts, he fired his gun and walked out. However, when it comes to the Deal family, Gary and Joan both had their throats cut after being shot. The killer specifically walked into Jason's room knowing it was there. He didn't appear to get lost in the home. All evidence suggests that this was done quickly, from Gary at the door straight to Joan into the bedroom and finally Jason in his own room still lying in his crib, possibly sleeping. This doesn't seem like someone just looking to kill someone, but instead, someone who wanted to send a message and through doing so, executed an entire family in cold blood. So if you're looking at this from the perspective that there was a personal connection, there's really only two ways to go with it. Either this has something to do with Gary's alleged connections to the Pagan Motorcycle Gang and other illegal activities, or it is in some way tied to the family and someone who knew them, someone they may have trusted enough for Gary to open the door in the middle of the night, not knowing what was waiting for him on the other side. Let's first look at the possibility that this was personal and not connected to any gangs or crimes. It seems like the killer had knowledge of the home. There's no indication that he was in there for a prolonged period of time, and it's believed that all three murders happened within minutes of one another. It's entirely possible that the killer could have committed all three murders in less than 10 minutes, with some considering it could have even been less than that. Whoever killed the family knew exactly where to go, knew Jason was in the house, and knew that Gary was going to open that door. While the exact time of the murders is unknown, given the fact that Joan was nude and Gary was only wearing pants, it's entirely possible the killings happened just before or while the family was sleeping. Someone knocks at the door, Gary throws on some jeans and goes to see who it is, but before Joan even knows what's happened, she's already being shot. A gun makes a lot of noise, but none of the neighbors reported hearing anything, which seems to suggest the crimes were committed at a time where either no one was home or most people would be sleeping. No particular vehicles were seen in the area that were out of place or unknown, which could imply the killer either arrived in the middle of the night or maybe parked somewhere else and walked to the family home, maybe coming through the very woods investigators searched in the aftermath. Based on forensics, we know the killer brought the weapons with him, both the gun and the knife. A knife is a very personal weapon to use, and what's the point of cutting the victim's throat after you've already shot them multiple times in the head? It's overkill, it's rage, and it's sending a message. If the killer were only targeting Gary, he could have shot him and left before Joan could even get down the stairs, but he doesn't. He goes into the home and kills everyone. If he was targeting only Joan, then maybe he would have had to have killed Gary at the door, moving on to murder Joan, but he doesn't have to kill Jason. I think it takes an especially twisted individual to be able to cut the throat of a 3-year-old in his crib without giving it a second thought. Even if Jason had been awake during the killings, he was in his crib. It's not like he's going to see anything unless you walk into the room. No, whoever killed the Deal family planned to kill Jason too. It doesn't seem like the kind of crime you're going to get from a jealous lover, ex-lover, anything like that. I think it's Jason's murder that makes it clear that this was something different. This wasn't someone who had gotten screwed over on a business deal or rejected by someone they had an interest in. This was vicious, gruesome, and extremely violent. However, it was also very professional, for lack of a better term. There wasn't a big fight, no broken items, no signs of a struggle, no forced entry, no attempts to take anything. As far as we can tell, whoever pulled off this crime did it calmly and coolly, and to me, that suggests someone who had done things like this before, someone who was either a serial killer or was the kind of killer you hire, which may be one and the same. That takes us full circle towards the biker gang connection. Now, there's never been anything specific which ties Gary to any particular gang or illegal activities, at least nothing which has been revealed to the public. I do think it's important to note, though, investigators at the time believed fairly strongly that Gary had ties to the Pagans, and Detective Nacido, in his 2019 interview, felt fairly certain that Gary had been involved in some illegal side businesses. While it was never directly stated, it was implied by the interviewer that this business was likely related to drugs, possibly cocaine. It wouldn't be super surprising. Gary was an avid biker up until the point of his accident. It's certainly possible he could have run with or simply befriended someone or multiple people with connections to that underground business. He gets injured, is laid out of work for a year, and needs a way to support his family. Is it truly so difficult to imagine that he could have agreed to work a side business to help alleviate the financial strain the couple had likely found themselves in? Now, I do want to be clear here. I in no way mean to impugn the reputations of Gary, Joan, or the Deal family themselves, but I think given all of the readings between the lines you have to do when police discuss this angle, there's at least a strong belief amongst investigators that something illegal was going on here. At this point, all we can really do is speculate. Whatever the illegal side business, there's always dangers that come with that. Louis Giambi was hired to kill a family because the husband was going to testify against him in an assault trial. How far do you think fellow bikers would go to silence someone they thought could possibly get them in trouble for trafficking drugs or stolen merchandise? Hell, there's even the possibility that Gary was in no way connected to any criminal activities, but was simply aware of them. The fact is, we may never know. There's a wide array of scenarios you could imagine, and they all share certain commonalities. Imagine, for some reason, this gang decides you're a liability. Maybe you worked with them and now you're on the mend and you want out, but you know too much. Maybe they don't want to let you go and you foolishly make a threat about going to the police if they don't let you. It doesn't even have to go that far. A lot of people who belong to criminal networks like murdering, kidnapping, drug trafficking, biker gangs don't need a ton of reasons to commit a murder. It's just something they either want or possibly enjoy doing. For whatever reason, it's not just about Gary. They could have killed him in the morning before he left for work, in the afternoon when he got home, on a random day when he was home and his wife and child were not. This person went to that home in the middle of the night knowing everyone was going to be there, planning to kill all three of them. What would be the point? Was it really a matter of killing them for personal reasons, or was it to send a message, or a sort of message? What better way is there to terrify anyone else who might be stepping out of line other than to say, this is what happens? Much like cartels, they don't just go after you. They go after you and those you love, and they insulate themselves by creating fear, by terrorizing anyone who even thinks about standing against them. The fact that the killer came prepared with weapons and a plan, got into the home, got out of the home, and no one knew what had happened for days, strongly suggests to me that this was done by someone who was skilled at this kind of thing. The killer didn't beat the victims, Joan wasn't sexually assaulted, nothing was taken, the house wasn't ransacked. It seems quite clear the driving goal was murder and nothing more. For whatever reason, Someone marked the Deal family for execution and then committed all three crimes in such a fashion as to leave police almost nothing to work with. 1978 was an extremely active time for serial killers. Ted Bundy rampaged through the Chi Omega sorority house. The Georgia Stocking Strangler Carlton Gary was active. The Hillside Stranglers committed their 10th and final murders. John Wayne Gacy was finally arrested. Dahmer committed his first murder, as did Andre Chikatilo. The list goes on. For whatever reasons, the mid to late 1970s were an extremely active time for some of the world's most twisted, vicious, and violent killers. In the midst of this all, the Deal family is killed, and for many, the possibility of a serial killer can't be completely ruled out. And obviously, during this time, there were many who were active, some who have never been discovered. Finding the answers to this incredibly disturbing mystery has not proven easy for investigators. Despite their efforts, especially early on, they just couldn't find what they needed. While at the time the common theory seemed to be a direct connection to a biker gang and drugs, they never found enough to confirm that. Today, there's less talk about a biker gang and more consideration that this could have been something more outside the box. Frankly, if police have any ideas beyond what has been discussed here, they haven't been open about sharing them. For all this time, a killer has walked free, and it may be beyond the bounds of the rational to consider that the killer may still be out there somewhere. 42 years is a long time. But when you lay everything out, Joan and Gary would only be in their late 60s if they were alive today. Jason would have been 45. Maybe it's not too late to still catch the person responsible and see him sentenced. Perhaps we could be on the precipice. There's an extra added terror when you consider the possibility of not being safe inside of your own home. Gary and Joan celebrated their 5-year anniversary and were likely murdered before the day was over or within hours of the beginning of the next day. Some have considered the possibility that this date could have specifically been chosen, an additional message to send. Perhaps it does boil down to something as simple as getting mixed up with the wrong people, but maybe there's a lot more to this terrible tragedy that we have yet to discover. Unfortunately, without further information, new evidence, or a direct confession, the Deal family murders remain open, unsolved, and very cold. If you're looking for more information on the Deal family murders, there are many archived news articles discussing the case at the time and a few articles of the current time discussing the 2018 developments. If you have any information about the Deal family murders, please contact Detective Mario Nocito of the New Jersey State Police Homicide South Unit at 609-561-1800. Extension 3354. You can be completely anonymous if you choose. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, message me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or comment in the Facebook group. I'd like to take a moment now to thank our amazing Patreon producers, Alicia Lorraine, Brittany Bivens, Christine Greco, Krista Colvin, D'Earthy, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, Jason Yeager, Jennifer Winkler, Kate Much, Kevin Bonham, Megan Cotter, Michael Draves, Nick Mohar Schurz, Pamela Coburn, Quinn McBreen, Roberta Jansen, Sarah Mascaratolo, Travis Skepsko, Stephanie Joy, Tom Archer, and Tracy Woods. You're all amazing and your contributions are greatly appreciated, as are all patrons. If you're interested in supporting Trace Evidence, please visit patreon.com/traceevidence or visit trace-evidence.com for further information. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.